G'day everyone. Proud to say Bar Karate is brought to you by Radix Nutrition, makers of the most technically comprehensive nutrition products that have ever existed. Unlock your potential with Radix. G'day listeners, welcome to Bar Karate, the sailing podcast. My name's Jordan Spencer and it's that time of the week where I get to hang out with some really cool sailors, but of course have to share the mic with my two idiot mates. First off, let's welcome Mr. Brett Perry.
Greetings, exalted one.
BP, wake up.
two idiot mates. I mean, do you realise how, I don't want to use the word famous, but how well known who idiot mates has become. At this function last night, which I'll talk about a bit later on, yep. It's like, how's your two idiot mates going?
Yeah, is that right? I love it. Love it. It's a good Aussie saying, you know. It is. Yeah, and I'd like to, I can just see the President of the United States one day just going, here's such and such and such and such, and my two idiot mates, you know, like it'll be, be pretty good.
It is true. Yeah.
It's true, yeah. All right, I'll bring in the other bloke.
He had a voice that could make a wolverine purr.
Young Nicholas Bice.
I've got a couple of apologies, but before I make those, are you wearing pants, BP?
No. No, I'm in bed.
Because, well, you're in the United Kingdom. Stand by. Jordan, your two idiot mates are doing this recording in their jocks.
Oh, I love it. I'm not taking my pants off just to keep you two happy. And because BP's in the UK, I think pants, come on, mate. Pants is your jocks. You
want to be part of the gang or not?
No, I'm cool.
Come on.
You're the two idiot.
Right. Do you want to hang out with the cool kids or not?
No, I don't belong.
All right, a couple of apologies, Ben. Okay. First of all, I don't have my recording kit with me, so I'm just doing over the computer due to a bit of a travel mishap and lost my luggage. I'll talk about that in a sec. The other one, last week, I said I was a bit underwhelmed with the America's Cup boats coming out and what we saw. I take that back.
There we go.
Wholeheartedly take that back. Now we've seen them in the daylight. Oh, my God.
Yeah, there you go. What
unbelievable machines are we dealing with?
Yeah.
They're
cool, huh?
Phenomenal. We'll chat about it in hot time, but super cool time for yachting. Yeah. Super cool to see what's happening.
It's just all happening, isn't it? Yeah. There's a lot going on.
The good thing is we're allowed to make mistakes when you talk as much as we're doing, you're allowed to make mistakes. So don't be feeling bad.
That was a massive one.
We'll let you off.
Yeah. So travel. Here we go. The joys of international travel, gents. So I spent last week with my family in Sydney, bit of touring around, you know, went and did all the stuff that you're meant to do, looked at opera houses and Bondi to Bronte Walk and all that sort of stuff. And I was departing on Friday evening via Dubai to Europe, to Palma. And then, of course, what do we see happen last week? The floods in Dubai.
Unbelievable.
2 years of rain. Falls in one big rain shower. Everything completely flooded. So as of 7 a.m. Friday morning, my flight's cancelled. In the meantime, we need to get rush a part from New Zealand up to Last Yoda, which is where I'm currently sitting, and it's actually where it all started for me here in Last Yoda, to get a part, and I've got no flight. And someone's flown from NZ to meet with me to hand this particular part over.
Wow.
By 10 a.m., next thing you know, I'm booked on a flight that afternoon, flying into Europe via Singapore. Delivered the part successfully.
Oh, it was in your carry-on luggage, was it?
But in the meantime, lost the rest of my luggage.
Jeez. Lucky you had it. Lucky you had it in the carry-on, eh?
Currently 8 a.m. I've got a flight at 1 p.m. today to Palmer.
Mm.
So straight after this call, I'm getting back to the airport to try and locate my luggage. Mm. Otherwise, I'll just have to go sailing next week in Palmer on a bunch of different boats and just get different crew kit for every single day.
Oh, I thought you were going
to say that's the way.
Hanging out in my jocks.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say in your jocks, go sailing in your jocks.
I've got my uniform on already.
Yeah. And you're going out, kid, as well.
What is it? It's only day three, so you've got the front to back to front, inside out. Now you've got to go inside out, back to front.
Oh.
So last night at dinner, we were down at the boat yesterday, and here I am in my flying pants, my flying shirt, flying jacket. Then I go to dinner. Here I am in my flying pants, my flying shirt, my flying jacket. Oh, you might have recognised me before. Guess what I'm wearing today? Flying pants, flying shirt, flying jacket.
When you travel, funny how often, when one thing goes wrong, a lot of other things go wrong. Like if you have, that you always lose your luggage on the trips where all the stuff's going crazy. So,
Then on top of that, I bunged my knee up and then I was sitting in the bloody, couldn't recline my chair and got my knees around my ears and hardly walk now. Oh, it's going well. Life's good.
Yeah, life's good. Life's
so
good.
All the youngsters out there trying to make it as a pro sailor, this is your future.
Well, but I'll tell you what, back in La Ciota, which is a bit of a hub for quite a bit of marine activity, it's actually, like I said, where it all started for me back in the day, building the Amos sports boats. So nice to be back in town.
Nice to be back in town. Well, I was with having a quiet evening last night with a pilot, an A350 pilot, who was talking about, who is sort of had got a little bit of a dabble in the industry, in the professional sailing industry as well. So he was saying that a lot of the people that are in this industry, you touched on it a second ago about flying, Jay, he said a lot of people in this industry actually spend more time in the plane than he does, and he's a pilot.
Yeah.
And it's true. When you think about it.
Yep.
God damn, we spend some time sitting down in that cramped little seat.
Yeah.
I hear you, brother. I hear you. Yeah, that's why sailing's increasingly becoming a small man sport. Cool. Small person. Thank you.
That's your theory.
Can't
small
fit the
person
planes.
Sport.
All right, let's get our guest in.
We're
very chuffed to have this guest because it will spark a lot of conversation across the world. He's a great man, a lot of fun to hang out with.
Absolute legend.
Yeah, definitely a legend. He's done pretty well in the Hobart, like 8 line on us. He's been touched. He keeps popping up on the hundreds and getting the line on us, although not this year. Won it overall on the handicap. He's on the Comanche program these days. But he's best known in the Etchell world, 20-odd years sailing Etchells. He's won 5 Australian champs. He came 3rd at the Worlds once. He came 2nd at the Worlds 3 times. And with his team of Richie Allinson and James Mayo has just won the world. So welcome to Barcarati, Mr. Graham Taylor. GT, welcome to the show, mate.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're fired up. Fired up. You boys did an amazing thing, and the level of determination and focus that you took on was pretty amazing. More than evidenced by the photo of you three together after the win, all shaved your heads, boys. You got the full aerodynamic program.
Yeah. It's not like there was a lot to shave off.
Yeah, shaved through old age and it fell out.
the hat was just rubbing the hair.
I know mine was sort of going that way, so I had to shave it about 20 years ago.
That's a good one, Jordan. Well done. I've actually worked it out. So GT's a normal size human being, right?
Yep.
But his head's normal size, unlike yourself, Jordan. Yours is just massive. You can't wear a hat. GT's just been wearing hats, just been slowly rubbing it away. That's why you got so much hair, Jordan.
Oh, okay. Spencer. I have to say, you've put a lot of effort, not just your whole team, but, a few personally, I think it would have been a pretty special day for you guys, for you particularly, you know, like the Etchell class has been part of your blood for quite a while, and to win the world champs in that class is everything. How did it feel, mate, going into that, coming across that line maybe right at the end there?
Oh, look, it was pretty cool, you know, like you say, I've been sailing the boats a long time, 25 years this year, and I did my first Etchell Worlds back in 2000 with a guy called Peter Gillen and Grant Warrington back in Sydney, and I think James Mayo actually did that regatta with, won the regatta back in 2000, which is with Dog and Cameron Miles. So, you know, and they were coming off the back of an Olympic campaign, and, you know, for me, I was watching excellence there, and when they won that, and, you know, for me to finally get there after, you know, 25 years of sailing the class and sailing with some great people, you know, from, you know, from Mothy Jarvin to, you know, Grant Simmer to Tom Slingsby, and I've had some ripper people to sail with, and, you know, had some awesome results, but never been able to quite get there. So to win this one was pretty sweet. And as you guys know, it's never easy to win a regatta, and it's certainly never easy to win a world championship. So yeah, it was a very special moment, and you know, fantastic.
So all those different combinations of crew that you've had over the years, obviously in years gone past, James has been there and Richie as well. Now, is it kind of just the icing on the cake? It all gelled at the right time?
Well, look, to be honest, sailing with Richie and James has always gelled pretty well. We did our first regatta together back in 2016, and basically we're all coming from different parts of the planet. I think Richie was overseas. We got on the boat. We got, you know, I was in Melbourne, national titles. We got on the boat on the afternoon before the regatta, never sailed together before, and went out for a quick sail. And the next day, we're sort of sailing out to the start line, talking about how, you know, we're going to communicate at the start and this, that, and the other. Anyway, we went on to win that first regatta, you know, which was my first national titles win, actually, in with those two guys. And, you know, it was kind of like from there, we really haven't had too many bad events, and it's kind of unique because I've sailed with, you know, some really amazing sailors like Tom and Grant Simmer, and, you know, that are tactically brilliant, and I guess none of us are at their, I guess, a level in terms of brilliance, but we sort of come together and sort of nut it out between us, so, you know, it's pretty cool.
Hell yeah. I mean, let's face it, three pretty fantastic individuals on the water, bringing it together, having been along. It's a pretty good lesson, you know, the more time on the water you spend, although you did win that first regatta together, but just gels and goes good. And in Perth, did you have a sense of this is us coming together? Was there just that extra little click, or you just knew if you did the good things right, you're going to get there?
We got back in the boat sort of this time last year, and we're a bit behind the eight ball to start with, but, you know, we had a pretty good winter. We won up at Moolabar, we won at Gold Coast, we, you know, lost at Coffs Harbour, and then, you know, we were sort of doing a bit of sailing out, you know, in Sydney, and we were sort of okay. We weren't perfect. And then, you know, we got to the Nationals after doing the Hobart Comanche and having a break. And we were probably a little bit underdone going to the Nationals. But, we won the Nationals. We then went on to win every regatta that we did for the summer. So, you know, we won the Nationals. We won the Corvettes. We won the WA States. Then we won the pre-worlds. So, you know, going into the Worlds, you know, there was that whole thing of going, holy hell, we've won everything this year.
Did not fuck it up.
And that was a real concern. And then, you know, I was in the bar at the Fremantle Sailing Club, and Skip Listman came up to me and he said, you know, GT, I won the pre-worlds back in 2006 here, and I came 10th or something in the worlds. He goes, oh. No, I'm in the pre-worlds and we're in the worlds. And I said, oh, thanks for that, Skip.
Yeah, thanks, Skip. Thanks for the advice, mate.
It went into the back of my head and I'm like, yeah, okay, I've got that. That was probably one of the, you know, it would have been horrific to not win after the summer that we'd have. So I thought, well, I'm not going to let Skip be right. And I had great pleasure in telling him afterwards that it was possible to win.
Yeah.
Did you talk about that going into the regatta? Did you talk about the pressure all that was going to be on you? Obviously, you would have had a little bit of a bullseye on your back because you were in form, and that's what happens. You know, everyone knows that you're out there. Did you have a talk about that before the start of the regatta?
Yeah, we sort of, you know, there's some really smart outfits in the HF class, you know, that turn up with everything they need to do, you know, what it takes to win the regatta. So we probably stayed, you know, we felt like we were in a good position, so we probably sort of avoided sailing with those guys a little bit prior to the regatta. And, you know, in terms of pressure, hey, we all deal with that differently, I guess. You know, James and Richie are quite routine orientated, which I'm probably not as much, but you know, we sort of did speak. We had, you know, sessions with a sports psychologist, which was, you know, sort of brought out some things. So, you know, I think we all deal with pressure differently. And, you know, it's certainly something that's part of the game, especially now that, you know, there's 9 races in the World Championship, and they, you know, go on over a course of a week. And varied weather conditions. So, you know, you have to keep yourself sort of together for that whole period of time.
Yeah, we obviously sailed against you a fair bit and watched it all happen over the past couple of years. James Mayo is an interesting one. He's so humble and it's unassuming, and you don't, you know, he often says, oh, you know, I just sit in the middle and do what I'm told, you know, but there's no way. There is no way that he does that.
Well, Richie's a pretty hard taskmaster. Yeah, no. Look, you know, James brings a lot to the table. He's obviously, you know, a brilliant sailor in his own right. And, you know, he's very good at sort of putting the whole package together. He fills in the gaps. He's very good at picking up where there's a gap and filling the gap.
Yeah.
And, you know, that obviously just adds so much to a, you know, a team like this when you, you know, when it takes so much to actually win.
Yeah, for sure. I
mean, I'm just looking at your results here, not to be sneezed at, just quietly. 5, 11, 1, 6, 1, 8, 14, which was the drop, 1 and 7. I guess... Andy Beadsworth, he was quite strong in the back half of the regatta. It looked as though you had a few pretty close on though in the back end of the regatta with those guys. Were they getting a bit quicker, or they just kind of had that?
Well, I guess out? You know, we weren't really in a threatened position by Andy. It was more the GBR boat. I think Graham Villas or So,
no dramas. Know,
in the last race, Andy couldn't get to us, so it was only that one boat that could beat us. So he sort of wasn't on the radar there, and you know, he was obviously coming good in the second half of the regatta. They obviously had some mojo. And look, probably the best race for us was that second last race where there was very few nice sea breeze days during the regatta there, and that was just a beautiful sea breeze race, and it was a full, you know, birded out of the left corner, and there was, you know, Andy was there and Laurie Smith and, you know, I think Billy was in there. It was just one of those nice races, you know. But, cool. He certainly was going really well, and, you know, he's a legendary sailor in his own, you know, he's in his own right, and having Ben Lamb there as well, you know, they just got better and better.
Ben Lamb, the well-known US sailor, Ben Lamb. One of the things about Richie is the diligence on the whole rig setup and, you know, finding the efficiencies in a boat, and that resulted in the 2019 World Champs. I'm interested, having sailed the class for 25 years, the things that have changed, you know, the way you would have sailed the boat 25 years ago versus the way the boats look and sail now. Is there anything that really sort of jumps out where you think that's the one of the big changes? Obviously, you know, I've got my own ideas, but...
I think, you know, probably the big change was made in 2019, and, you know, I think you guys spoke to Richie and Big Fella, or maybe Richie, about that back then. But, you know, when we went and, you know, after the 2018 Worlds, where we both had absolute shockers, we went and built those two boats and went to Texas, you know, with the focus of being first and second, which is what we achieved. They were first, we were second, and, you know, but that, you know, obviously through that course of that, we ended up with the, you know, different sort of setup with the inboard sheeting and, you know, sheeting a lot harder and all the rest of it. So really nothing too much has changed for us from there. It's just a slight progression. You know, Richie is obviously an absolute, I say to Richie, he's got a doctorate in...
doctorate in
yachting. Yeah, well, just a doctorate in yachting, and I think if you do 20,000 hours of the same thing, you get considered that you're a doctor. And I call it doctor.
I think that's a good one. That'll stick.
Yeah, and look, you know, he's a toiler. You know, he loves things to be perfect, and he just toils and toils and toils, and you know, he built lots of different sails for us, and, you know, we got to the point where he doesn't even tell me what it is or what he's done with it. Basically, I have to put it up blindfold and I have to go A, B, or C. You know, it's a little bit like when you go and get your eye test, you know, and they go, is A, B, or C? And, you know, I'm like, oh, I think C. So I couldn't even tell you what sails we actually use. They just get to choose out of A, B, or C.
Yeah. I tell you what my difference is. Now, stand by for this.
Okay.
I've been known.
No, they've taken the esky out.
Been known to take the piss out of the whole Mold 11 thing, right? And that pure for entertainment purposes. And I've been vocal on that and apologise to anyone I have offended. Reality is, I remember Kingy back in the day when they won the Worlds on Barrett. They put it down. They went sailing. They took a coach out with them, believe it or not, back in the day. Now you're talking about sports psychology, time on the water, all those different regattas you've done, sailing against the best in the world. Hey, that's just, I mean, of course, the advancement in rig setup, sails, you know, sheeting, all that sort of stuff is good, but just time on the water, holy shit, that's it right there, right?
Well, certainly, you know, the more comfortable you get in the boat, the easier it is. And when you know, especially when we did a lot of these races in this fluky sort of easily, obviously big shifts, but big pressure changes up and down. So the quicker you can, you know, more automatic you are in the boat, it just makes a huge difference. You know, and then, you know, in terms of coaching, you know, we had what I would consider the best coach in the world in Ian Murray, you know, like, and he doesn't say much, but he's a fellow that doesn't need to say much. When he talks, you listen, and he just hits the mark every time. And what he added,
can you give us a little bit of an insight into a little bit of a coaching debrief after the race? He's come in and you've, let's say you've had a bit of a tough one. What does he do? We all know him as the quieter, assuming bloke.
He goes, "What did you do that for?" he's quite pragmatic, I guess, in how he understands that it's easy to make an error in this racing or any racing, but his observations of how to fix it are always, you know, right on point. You know, I think that it's not ever a big change that you need to make. It's just, you know what to do, just do it, you know, in a sense. But, you know, he just brings a lot of just stability, and he's always a voice of reason. And just you know, insanely smart and clever and and imposing on other teams in the boatyard. You know, like to have real basket, you know, he's a big fella.
Rob Brown always used to say, "You, the status of your campaign is how good your jockey wheel is on your trailer." And that was in the 18th. Now it's like the coach walking through the boat part with you. You got the big fella there protecting you.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. So what's
he's keen, you know, to help get go, and you know, to have him come over and do that, you know, off his own bat. It's just, you know, for me personally, it was amazing, you know.
Very cool. It's got plenty on his plate too at the moment. I'm a little concerned. I was just thinking about the three personalities on your boat and the sports, using a sports psychologist. Did you follow back up with the psychologist to see how they are emotionally?
Yeah, I think we've got that next week. I'll have to report back in to see what happens.
I'm just trying to think how those conversations, where that person would have come in just going, what have I done?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I mean, I haven't done much of it in the past, but certainly it's, you know, hey, every little bit helps along the way, I guess, and we all process stuff in different ways, I guess, and you know, even when you talk to a sports psychologist, we all interpret what they say differently too.
Yeah, very true. So,
it's
what's the biggest thing you took out of it? What's the biggest thing you took out from talking to him?
The biggest thing I took out was probably trusting in your gut. You know. And making decisions based off your gut feel, and but when you trust, trying to be cool when you're trusting your gut, not sort of hot. So, you know, how often do you do something, you know, or in a yachting race or anything in your life where you go, oh, I think I need to do this now, and you don't do it, and you look at it and you go, geez, I was right. I should have done what I should have tacked there, or I felt like I needed to do that and I didn't do it. So, you know, I guess that's what I took out of it, is when your gut's telling you you've got to do something, do it, and worry about the consequence later.
Yeah, right.
Right. Today could be a whole different day. I'm looking forward to it. Piedmont Bridge Hotel's just down the road. You never know what might happen.
It's not about eating pricing. Trusting your gut. Yeah, I need to put some Dim Sims in it.
So obviously now you've won the Worlds, it takes that all that pressure out, and do you think it'll change the way you sail, like an Etchell now? Like, do you think, as you said, you had this amazing year, like it was pretty easy doing the coverage for Etchells. You just automatically write you guys down in first, you know, like it was that sort of year. Now that you got the Worlds, you're all world champs on that boat. You've got another world champs coming up in your home turf in 25. Are you going to be able to sail in a different way, do you think, or the pressure is less, or you're just still intense?
I don't think it really changes a lot. It's still, you know, super hard to win. But certainly there is that pressure of having to win and, you know, am I ever going to win one of those things, sort of, you know, is certainly off your back, you know, having had 3 seconds and a third in the prior five world championships to that event. You know, you sort of go, you know, with three races to go in this event, we were on even points with the GBR guy. After we had that 14th, and I was just sitting there going, oh my God, not again, not another second. And I think, you know, Judd Smith, you know, like the legendary sailor, had 6 seconds in the Etchell Worlds before he won his first. You know? It's possible to do. And I remember thinking, geez, how could you possibly get 6 seconds and not win one of them? And then I'm like looking down the barrel of four going, oh, my God, I'm going the same way. So certainly, you know, if you look at nationals as a thing, as soon as one dropped, they sort of came quite easily. But I'm not saying a world championship's ever going to be easy to win, but it certainly takes a little bit of pressure away.
I remember, I think Howie Hamlin in the 5.0s won eight, got second eight times or something. And they have a big globe trophy for second place, and he never even touched it. He refused to go and touch the bloody thing. He just did. It's just, yeah. It's that's
took on the first loser attitude, eh?
No, it's just, you know, you're focused on the win, you know, when you're that close, I get it, you know, that it's just so intense. And I guess that's what you're saying, BP, with first loser sort of thing. But, you know, now that pressure's off, so you can just relax, you know. That's what I imagine that's how it would feel, like in the expectation of winning, that psychology of when you step out there that, you know, you've done it better than anyone else. So that pressure goes away, in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a cool club to join. You know, an actual world champion, there's not, you know, that many of them. And, you know, on the trophy, there's some ripper names and some legends of the sport. So it's super cool to get it in the cabinet. And it certainly does take a lot of pressure off. Does it make it any easier? I don't think so. Just, you know, it's just ticking a box of going, hey, we did it and we have that now. So that's, you know, that's super cool.
I've got an idea, GT.
Oh, I got one too.
Right. Similar to the Masters.
Yeah, you know,
invite all the ex-Masters winners for a dinner.
Yeah.
I think at the Melbourne Worlds, you should invite all the ex-world champions to a dinner to your restaurant.
Yeah, there you go.
Absolute rebel.
We'll get them down to Captain Jack's at Yeringa, which is... got this beautiful... Maybe we need a IRC regatta there, Bison.
Oh, yeah, nah, definitely. We're doing that. But I'm just wondering, what colour jacket would you roll?
No, boss. It's not. I've got it worked out. This is exactly where I was going. So we just saw the Masters, the green jacket, right?
Yeah.
You know, the tradition, you know, the strong US influence in the Etchells fleet, it's the red shorts that you wear.
Oh, it's got to be red shorts.
Everyone gets the red shorts. So you got to stand on stage and put a pair of red shorts on. That's what I think it should be.
Fucking that's definitely not happening down at Captain Jack's. I'll give you the drum.
Good. Awesome.
So, Melbourne Worlds. Team staying together?
Absolutely. Yeah. We haven't really put any plans in place yet, apart from they're in January. And like turn around from the last Worlds, but also the Sydney Hobart race. So, you know, we'll probably be a little bit under the pressure there.
Oh, so why don't you just, oh, geez, talk about mole 12, just used 100-footer.
Yeah. I don't think we'd actually get it into Brighton to death. Like, I don't think it's yellow there. Yeah.
So along with the Etchells GT, 25 years worth, big boats have been a big part of your life throughout that time as well, and even beforehand. That's a journey in itself. That's a whole nother episode. Walk us through that a little bit.
Look, I've been, you know, probably like yourself, guys, I've been really fortunate and to sail on some cool boats. And, you know, probably did start out here in Mornington with Grant Warrington and his boats. And we had a cool time there. And we built that 100-footer back in 2003 and won the race, which was, certainly a different time to it is now, you know, to what it's like now. But, you know, back then we had speed limits. We couldn't go above 1.6 IRC.
Yep. So
made that boat look a little bit sort of different, you know, two-spreader rig and crazy stuff like that. But, you know, we were able to win that race with basically a local sort of project, you know, with crewed by locals down here.
Yeah.
Sort of a huge thing. So that was sort of, you know,
can I give you one of my favourite stories from that particular Hobart, GT? And children, please don't do this at home, but there was quite a few of us on the burners just coming down the Tassie coast, and good mate Spikey, Pete Dorian, he's like ashed his cigarette and it's burnt a hole in his brand new Line 7 wet weather pants. So he's like, oh, fuck, what do I do now? Warro's going to kill me. So he takes his pair down, swaps the little name tag out with Barney Walker's, puts Barney's on, bangs Barney's bag on the rack.
Yeah, good. Oh,
and then I think to top it off, at the end of the race, we're cleaning the boat out and there's rubbish going in rubbish bags. There was laundry going in the bags, which were the same as the rubbish bags and all the wet weather gear got thrown away anyway.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was a cool project, wasn't it, Bicey? You know?
Like, oh, good project. Bloody hell.
And, I remember, it was basically designed completely by Donnie Jones. And I was sitting there one day with Donnie and I said, Don, when you sell this house, I'm going to buy it. So I ended up buying his house out of the whole deal, which ended up still live there today, which worked out pretty good. But So obviously that was cool. And then, I was fortunate enough to, after that ended, to sort of join, Rico and the Oaks guys and did quite a few races with them, which has been, fantastic. And then that sort of COVID came along and they didn't want to sail and then, Squark rang me up and went and did one with Blackjack and won their one with them, which was, super cool. I really enjoyed that. Those guys were, overdue for a win. Oh, they're always in Justin's house talking of ashing cigarettes at Squarky, but that was great. And then, Herman came along with Comanche and we spent the last 2 years doing that, which has been, super, super fun. And Herman and the winning family are great people to sail for. And very, we've had we've probably had more fun on the land than on the water. they're very inclusive and we've had a great couple of years. So.
Hey, what's your count in Hobarts for wins across the line and be up there?
Yeah, I think it's 8 lineups and 1 handicap. And one record.
Yeah, I like it.
I'll have to go and do an audit.
Mate, you'll be spewing if someone offers you, you should be right this year with the Comanche, but if someone comes along with a 98 footer, it's like, nah, sorry, mate. Only hundreds.
Yeah. Well, you get spoiled. When the race, when you don't have to think about the race being longer than 2 days, it's sort of one or something. You sort of get a little bit spoiled. I don't want to be out there for more than one night, but
a little overnighter.
Gone are the days of saying, I'm not going south and under a 50 footer, mate. No way.
Yeah. Well, I've only done that once out of my 27 races.
Yeah, I was just wondering about that. It's ridiculous. Although I did see those class 40s, they did 430 nautical mile yesterday. So you got 40 footers starting to cover quite a bit of distance. They could be doing it in the same sort of time frame. But yeah, do you like it?
I mean, you're going back straight, mate.
Yeah, I know. So when you get on 100, compared to the actual sailing, right? When you get on 100, what are you on the Comanche? You trimming traveller or something? Is that right?
I'll do a bit of everything. Do a fair bit of driving and sitting wherever I'm needed, basically.
Yeah.
But, a boat like Comanche is the ultimate bogan boat, you get a bit of wind. It's great.
Bogan boat. So you've got the elbow on the lifeline, one hand on the wheel.
Yeah.
It's back of the wind on the shoulder.
Yeah. It's, I guess it's the long way around the drag curve. You end up, once you get the hull up out of the water, it goes like a bat out of hell. It's great fun when you start doing that, but it's certainly not the easiest boat to sail. In terms of you have to have a lot of sail air up, and you have to be pushing it the whole time to make it to go. And some of those other boats, like your Oates's and your Blackjacks, are pretty easily driven, so they sort of always going pretty nice, pretty nice, but. This thing, once it gets going, you can really put some miles down quick, but you spend a fair bit of time just sort of trying to survive until you get that moment.
It's interesting because, when you're obviously on 100 footer, there's a lot of bodies roaming around and, communication must be amazing. But then I just was thinking that and then I suddenly realised that Bice has just got off a boat with 48 other blokes. And it'd be like sailing a single hander coming back onto the Comanche if for bias, you know. Like, I wonder if you could actually go and do a little bit of sort of training on the, you know, a 200 footer, and then it'll seem, everything will seem easy on the 100.
Yeah. Oh, look, well, I think they're pretty well set up. You know, look, a boat like Comanche now is pretty well thought out, you know, so sail changes have got a lot easier than probably what they were when it was launched, you know, with everything furling. So,
oh, yeah. Not to mention everything on pedestals originally. That
yeah,
boat.
And on pedestals, you know.
It's holy shit.
Mm. More of the thing is just it's just more of a management thing in terms of, you know, the engineer in the boat's a super important role, you know. Like if you blow a hydraulic line or you lose the engine, that becomes as big a problem as not having the 48 people, you know.
Yeah.
Back on communication, GT, how'd you go with our mate, good mate Nieti and Patan?
Well, you've got two guys there that are quite different. We've got one guy who's probably the most relaxed guy you're ever going to meet, and one guy that is saying something I still can't figure out what he's saying, but I love the guys and had an absolute ball sailing with both of them. And, Pablo's very, very good at his craft and super relaxed and super cool. So, and so is Nettie. So, I still can't figure out what Nettie said. You know, I have to ask Pablo for a breakdown of what he just said.
We have to say we're sorry because we taught him English in the shed in Telefonica, and every second word was fuck. So, that's how it was.
Yeah.
Explains the Telefonica program. I do have to ask, while we're talking about the Comanche, we've got to go back to the end of the Hobart where we're all watching on TV. I just wonder, speaking of swear words that we just were going through, I mean, what was the communication like on board in that last few hundred metres?
Yeah, I was hoping you wouldn't bring that up.
Yeah, sorry, bud.
Probably the worst bit of the summer, I guess, and... you know, it's one of those things. It was it was probably when the gods just don't want you to win, and it was a perfect storm against us, you know, and in terms of what happened, and you know, you sort of play it over in your head a million times how you would have done it differently if you had another go at it. The communication was pretty calm. It was sort of, you know, it was a tense moment, but everyone was sort of focused on the job. And you know, at the end of the day, that Comanche is a super difficult boat to sail in those conditions.
I was going to say, my question was going to be to you just then. I mean, what could you have done different? You really couldn't have done much. I mean, you could probably done a couple of jibes here and there, but you stopped the boat.
Well, if we had a diamond saw underwater, doesn't work. Cut about 3 meters out of the center line.
Yeah. Oh, look, there's lots of things. You know, like it's a more challenging boat to jibe than, you know, the Law Connect was in those conditions because of the keel, the way, you know, the keel works on that with the pin angle and stuff like that. And, you know, it's obviously got more wetted surface when it's upright. You can't tip it over. You can't put enough weight on the bow, you know, and it's like sailing a brick at that point. And it was challenging. And, you know, I guess, the worst part of it was that, you know, the winning family and Herman just put so much into the whole campaign, and to, you know, to lose
45 away from it.
Devastating. And, you know, it was probably something that gave a lot of fire to make sure we didn't lose the actual worlds.
Yeah. I was just going to say, you know, on Law Connect, you know, they talk about return on investment, you know, and, that's how that sort of whole program's put together. For Herman and Woody, I would have thought that the amount of coverage that they would have got from that TV, you know, everyone zooming in on that, would have paid, you know, you couldn't pay for that amount of TV time. That would have been fantastic. So, you know, there's wins and losses.
Yeah, well, hopefully they sold a few more fridges and whatever.
18,000. And 18,360 microwaves walked out the door.
Hopefully that softens the blow. So. It didn't help my ego, I can tell you.
you didn't get a free fridge at the end. I'm interested with the Etchell, though. I just wanted to ask, why Magpie?
Oh, that's an interesting one. So, well, first Etchell that I bought was bought by, or was built by John Bertrand. Mm. And he was starting with Billy Brown and Ernie Lawrence. And Bertrand's a Magpie fan.
Collingwood.
The other two were Saints. So the boat was called Two Saints and a Magpie.
Yeah, I remember that.
It was owned by Chris Hampton, and the Two Saints had gone off. It was called Magpie. So it came with the name Magpie, and I kind of liked it, so I didn't change it. I'm not very good at picking names. I'm not very crazy.
Well, that's obvious.
Where Magpie came from. We just keep on with it. And then Squark was always dirty at me because, you know, we'd been over in Perth in 2006 and done the Worlds there in Seabreeze every day, and all the older boats, the 90 boats with the heavier keels, were pretty competitive over there. So, you know, we both said, geez, we need to get that 947. And I think he went to America sailing or something, and I'd bought it before he got back. So he never spoke to me for a couple of years about, you know, stole the boat or anyway. But I just sold that boat a couple of years ago to Squark, that 947. Yeah. So he got the Magpie and pulled the mag off, and now that's called Pie.
Pie.
Pie actually comes from Two Saints and a Magpie, so
it's diminishing.
Yeah.
I wonder who
what's next. Yeah. What's next, Jordan Spencer?
Yeah. I.E. That's
example. No.
Sparky pulled the mag off. Can you imagine if he pulled the pie off and just left it as mag? It'd be a bit wild.
Yeah.
So tell us about your day-to-day life, GT. You're in the marine industry, kind of
proper working job.
Yeah, it's a grown-up. It's a proper grown-up job, right?
Yeah, proper grown-up job. Yeah, no, we've obviously Hart Marine, working with Mel Hart, who built the fine craft for us back in 2003.
Actually, reminds me of a story. I've been known to mix a bit of glue at Mount Hart's factory because I think it was part of the 03 campaign, GT, when myself and Spikey and yourself thought it'd be a good idea to go riding motorbikes in the middle of the night.
Oh, yeah.
And then sitting up, having a few lagers deep into the evening, and I thought your wife, her nice little bookshelf next to the next to the couch was something to sit on, but no, it definitely wasn't something to sit on, and just disintegrated. And here I am the next day at Mao's mixing some glue up, gluing back together your bookshelf for your house.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was, I think, was it Partridge trying to start the motorbike at about 4 in the morning in the garage?
Good for the neighbours.
Yeah, yeah.
Children, don't do this at home. Yeah. Anyway,
yeah. That's a very canon thing to do.
Yeah. We haven't built many race yachts in the last few years. I think Limit was actually the last
Race, of course,
out of the factory, but we're pretty heavily into the commercial space. Some police boats, but mainly pilot boats. So we're having a pretty cool pilot boat business. We're, you know, doing 4 to 6 boats a year, all over Australia and New Zealand, and we've sent a couple of boats overseas to Dubai. So the business is going super good, and we had the opportunity to purchase a marina a few years ago, and that has a fair bit of land associated with it, like a lot of land, over in Western Port. So we have 120 berth marina over there. We have, you know, 110 boats on the hard stand. We've got 3 travel lifts, you know, 75, 40, 30-ton travel lifts and trailers, and boats going everywhere over there. And we're in the process of just going through the planning process for our new factories over there for Hart Marine. So,
oh, wow.
So we've sort of got a real opportunity sort of down in this neck of the woods. You know, we've got sort of 50 acres of land, so we've got opportunities to create something good for the marine industry, I guess along the lines of what we see at Queensland with Coomera and the like. There's sort of nothing like that down here. So that's sort of our plan, and it's a long-term plan, as you can imagine. And but yeah, that's sort of chipping away on that, and you know, it comes with a lot of moving parts. It's pretty cool.
Manufacturing in Australia is not an easy concept. I mean, is that you find you've sort of worked your way through that, and you're obviously doing about 5 or 6 boats a year, so you've obviously got it right. It's not easy to balance the cost of labour and all that sort of stuff.
Well, I guess I know it's more expensive to manufacture in Australia, but how much? And why be afraid of it? So the thing is that when I look at a pilot boat, the materials are the materials, no matter where you build it in the world, you know, and generally life, the materials make up probably, you know, half of the actual cost to build something, and the other half, you know, might be labor. But if you look at, you know, the materials are going to, if you're using the right materials, it's going to cost you the same no matter where you know, and if you're building a boat, if it's got 20,000 man hours in it, well, it's just the difference in the cost of the man hours, and which isn't really, it's not as much as you think in true cost. And by the time you look at, you know, building stuff overseas with, you know, having to have expats there looking after the cheaper labor and then shipping it out to wherever it's got to go, unless you're actually producing huge volume, like, say, Grand Banks, it probably doesn't make sense. You know, a lot of the tenders that come out in Australia do have, you know, an Australian-made component or, you know, requirement. And if you're trying to meet survey standards, that's a whole other thing. Makes manufacturing in Australia possible. So, you know, we're passionate about manufacturing in Australia, and we want to keep it here. And I think we need to keep it here. And, you know, we all want to support the marine industry, and, you know, to be able to do that here is pretty cool.
I think
absolutely. Yeah, I wish I could for all those reasons. It's just, you know, smaller numbers. It's not easy.
I think the Prime Minister just came out and talked about manufacturing in Australia yesterday or the day before. So, you know, you're probably well placed.
They're looking for handouts, no.
I feel we have to talk about one issue, boys, we haven't touched on. Do we want to talk about it?
I don't know. What's the issue?
My internet at the moment, or
the fact that I left my adapter at work, or
all those things. No, sailing three up. That's another element of the Etchell thing that I'm interested in. You know, the three up element.
Jeez, I thought it was going to be worse than that.
Yeah.
Well, you leave the tough shit to me, Jordan.
I'll do it. I just wanted to have the humour element, you know, like that was it. Obviously, we knew where we were going, but the three up element is a big deal, you know. Like a lot of, when you go through the numbers at the Worlds, it's been four up boats that sort of tend to get to the top of the sheet recently, which, you know, I think is criminal. You know, decent sized human beings should still have a chance to go sailing. And to take them out of the Etchells, then really things are getting desperate. So, you know, three up, well done.
Yeah, hey, I guess, you know, obviously there's some great boy band teams out there, isn't there, sailing four up?
But, love it.
Certainly for me, there's at plus of 100 kegs, there's no chance that I'm going to be sailing three up unless I sail with a couple of kids. But, you know, I certainly don't think it's any disadvantage sailing three up. And, you know, I think that, you know, some of the four up teams have been just, you know, great teams. And, you know, I don't think there's really much in it between three up and four up. I certainly don't feel any disadvantage.
Yep. I was just interested. I just wanted to touch on it and see if there was any thought went into that element, you know, and it's just really put the right crew together effectively.
Yeah, look, to be honest, that's the first time it's entered my head. You actually saying it is going, well, does it make a difference? I don't think it does. I think there's bigger stuff going on than three or four up. So, you know, and hey, nothing in the world's completely perfect. And the fact that the Etchell class has done this and allowed three or four up crews to meet the weight limit has actually opened the class up to just a whole lot more people, you know, so which is cool as well. So I don't think there's any great advantage, you know, there's probably pros or cons both ways, you know. The wage bill is certainly going to be more expensive, isn't it?
Yeah.
Depends if that kid's child labour or not.
Yeah. Maybe we should do an audit.
I love it. I guess the other element then is with the Mole 11 crap, did you have to modify your boat?
No, we didn't modify it. We did modify our boat. hey, all the boats have been modified, and you know, I think Grant Simmer probably did a great job with what they did to, you know, appease the whatever they thought was going on there. You know, I think it's probably one of the worst things that's ever happened to the Etchell class over its course of its history. And, you know, I don't think it's out of the woods yet with it. And it still has the potential to ruin the class in the future. And, you know, I think everyone involved needs to be careful what they wish for going forward.
I agree.
There's, you know, the Mole 11 boats are good boats. I think the Mole 12 boats look like they're going to be good boats. The Ontario boats are going pretty good. You know, I think they're all much of a muchness. I've had the same results in a Bashford, same results in a Smidmore, same results in a Heritage boat as a Mole 11 boat. So, you know, I don't know what will happen in the future, to be honest. But, you know, I think what we've seen in Australia and what we saw in Sydney, certainly at Christmas time, is more of a, you know, people, whatever, with modifications that have been made, the fleet feels that it's, you know, made the boats more even. And if that's what the fleet feels, that's a really good thing.
Okay. Do I comment on what I think? What do you think, boss?
I think to GT's point, be careful what you wish for. I mean, yes, as I said before, I've been taking the piss completely out of this whole saga. But the reality is it's going to fuck the class. Sorry for the language. And which is not going to, there's no winners out of that. I'll give you the drum right now.
I'll come in. One thing I don't want to see, and I really, really can't emphasize this enough, is I would hate to see anyone that disrespects the world championship that you guys achieved, you know, with no evidence in mind. That, you know, for me as an outsider looking into the actual class, all the development on the rig stuff is what jumped out to me. The difference in the hull's negligible as an outsider looking in. Knowing, you know, there's so many other classes out there where you build boats with intolerances and, you know, like everyone knows, you know, all the different fins, you know. Everyone's went from the Classica to the Fantastica or whatever it is, and 5.0s, you know, there was boats built to different shapes to fit with intolerances. So classes have tolerances for a reason. And there's much more important things. And to me, the thing that gave the success in 2019 was all that rig development and, you know, bringing your forestay up tighter and different sheeting, being able to sheet different. That to me was the ultimate. It was obvious that that made a difference. And so I guess the point I want to say is that I would hope that there's nobody devalues your world championship, because I think that would be a crime. And, you know, for me, a massive
risk. Not to mention getting together at 6:30 in the morning in the middle of winter and training three times a week. That doesn't make you better.
No. No.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it was a really unfortunate situation. What happened, you know, the boat had been around when this whole saga started. The boat had been around for, you know, a long time, you know, 7, 8 years, whatever it was, been doing a lot of regattas and never really, you know, showed up to be any different or any better. And it wasn't until 2019 when, you know, we went, you know, went in, to Texas that it created that question mark. And certainly it was not ever on any of our radars until, you know, it blew up into a major storm. You know, I think that, you know, what's happened's happened. The boats have been modified. Whatever that does, who knows? The boats are, you know, I can't tell you. I can tell a huge difference. The boat, you know, it's hard to win an actual race in any boat. Yeah. And that hasn't changed. And, you know, I don't feel any better in the Model 11 than I did in the Heritage or the Bashford boat. You know, they're all got their slight, you know, differences where you think they're slightly better or worse. And, you know, but, you know, I think that the, you know, the key going forward is to, for the class to, you know, put this behind it. And move on. There's bigger stuff to, bigger fish to fry. And if you look at the world championship that we've just had, there's a lot of Model 11s in the fleet, and they're scattered pretty much throughout the fleet.
Yeah,
you know, I had a look at that myself. You know, and I think that, you know, what we've seen is that, that it's not like the first 10 boats are Model 11s and then all the rest.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like they're scattered throughout the fleet, and you know. I don't think that, you know, there's a great difference. You know, Robbie Doosan, who's new to the class, would be a mate of yours, probably Bicey from South Australia. He, you know, great bloke. He goes, look, I don't feel any disadvantage at all. I feel like I'm racing you. So, you know, and there's a fresh set of eyes into it. So, look, I think, you know, my only thing is that if it doesn't get voted back in, I think that'll be the end of the class, and that's that, you know. So at the end of the day, there'll be always people that say that, you know, we won the Worlds in a Model 11 and we're not good enough, and that's, hey, good on them, and let them get up and give it a go. And
yeah, that's right. Yeah,
I reckon you just say to them, you know what,
step up,
skip shit, I won the red pants. So fuck yourself.
Scooter McGavin.
Scooter McGavin, that's it. It's the Scooter McGavin, the pants of the world champion. The Scooter McGavin. Oh, I love it. I love it. Hey, one of the good things, like, let's talk positive stuff while we're still on the Etchells, is really positive stuff is in the lead up to the Worlds, there's quite a few events coming up. The Australasian Winter Championships, which are on the 8th of June, the 22nd of June, and the 6th of July. That's 3 weekends in a coming up in Coffs Harbour. So for the offshore people, Coffs Harbour has probably got the best environment in Australia. You know, it's a beautiful place to go. Then you've got the Gold Coast Championships. So, you know, you have to switch straight back. If you go in the Goldies in July, you're going to have to switch into your Comanche mode, you know, full bogan sailing. And then the Mick Hole Regatta, we start in Pittwater, and then Australian Champs in Matung. So going lake sailing out to the east of Melbourne, so in Victoria, and then the World Champs 6th to 14th January. Hopefully she's not a slow Hobart for you, so you're not still on the water come 6th January.
That would be a slow Hobart.
Yeah, very slow Hobart.
Yeah, it felt like we weren't going to finish till the 6th of January this year, I can assure you, when we're in the river.
Yeah.
I was going to say, even when we had the finish line in sight.
But if you want to go Etchell sailing, there's plenty on, is what I'm saying. Got a world.
Yeah, and I got to say, if you are interested, it's a fantastic fleet to get involved in. It's a great fun bit of sailing.
Mm. If you get tired of Etchells, GT, what are you going to, and hundreds, what would you do next?
Look, I haven't really put a lot of thought into that, but I would like to. Hey, my son Digby is 17 now. He's selling a laser, and I'd love to do something with him at some point. And I'd love to even do a Hobart with some of the local kids from around Mornington and give them the opportunity that I had when I was young. Yeah. With Bicey and Spike and those guys to do something, like kids don't get the opportunities to do this stuff unless, we help them get into it. So, we've all been lucky in that we, managed to sort of navigate our way through. But when you don't live in Sydney and don't spend a lot of time there, it's hard to get an opportunity, as you guys would know.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. I like that a lot. That would be cool. So you want to see, I think that's probably the hardest part about sailing for Australian Sailing and everyone involved in sailing, and about a million emails I get a week with people with different ideas, is how we get the kids to keep sailing, that transition period from where, say, your son's age and then, the next 10, 15 years, and both male and female, obviously. That's where we start losing people and they come back later on in life, but to keep going, it's got to be fun. That's it. That's my rule. It's got
to
be fun.
Yeah. I mean, I think that classes like the Etchells need to do more to get more youth involved. And, the problem is, I guess, Etchell sailing can get a bit expensive, but it doesn't need to be. But, we need more youth teams in the Etchell class. We need more things for kids to do than rather than sail Olympic classes, because only a fraction of 1% are going to ever get to a level good enough to sail in that. But that doesn't mean they can't be great, great people in the sport and be involved, longer term. So, I think...
Blake's your size, a decent-sized human beings. There's no Olympic class for you, unless you're going to do the IQ4 now. But there's, anyone above 80 kilos, we've got to find something for them to do. So,
yeah, 100%. So, I think that's sort of the question of the sport, how we retain the younger people and get them more involved and get them sort of becoming the next leaders of the sport.
Mm.
But touching on what you said a second ago, GT, about the the pending decisions with the Mould 11s and all that sort of stuff, this was what was happening a couple of years ago before all this shitstorm started. We had the youth thing going on in Sydney. You remember back then, we had three or four teams out there every Saturday with us, and that was the start of it. And then it just shit itself because of what happened. And that's the type of thing that can happen when this negativity comes to any class. It just stops everyone wanting to put back in.
Mm.
James Mayo is a perfect example.
I've got an idea. I've got an idea.
Love it.
Here we go.
I've got a proposal, right? Down at your marina, GT. I can see it now, GT Sailing Academy. got to get a few kind of older type ex-Hobart boats in there just to give the kids a bit of a crack. Going to be perfect.
Oh, mate, I reckon we get Jordan to talk to the Prime Minister, get some funding.
Absolutely.
And,
got him on speed dial.
Put your ringer down on Western Port Bay on the map for youth sailing.
I love it.
Yeah.
Just like old times. We could get the old Wild Thing and Secret Men's Business back together, GT. We'd look just like old times.
How good. Yeah, I mean... Yeah. sailing back in the old days had a lot more Corinthian... element in it, and I think we're losing that, or we've lost it, and I don't know how you get a bit of that back. I don't know.
Hopefully the double hander thing, I think that's one thing for offshore stuff. The double hander element might be one. That was one
idea. It doesn't do much for getting more people involved, double hand sailing, though, does it?
Unless you bring lots of boats,
yeah, lots of boats. But I think that I don't think double handing's for me.
Oh, no. Okay. All right.
No.
That was a joke there.
As our good friend passed away a few weeks ago, he says he doesn't do ropes. He always said he didn't do ropes. And I think he had a point.
I love it. All right, we're kind of out of time. Anything, nice. Anything else you boys want to bring up before we let this man go?
I just want to really congratulate you all. All three of you deserve what you got. It was great to see and loved watching it. So well done, mate.
Thanks very much.
Oh, here, here. Bloody good to see you. Good, mate. Take out the title and... yeah, I'm looking forward to GT Sailing Cat. I'll send you some notes on all the ideas.
Yeah, perfect.
Cool. All right, mate.
Thanks, boys. Cheers,
mate. Cheers, mate. Well done.
Thanks.
Having known GT for the best part of, all of my sailing career, we're in the pro side, he's probably the most down-to-earth and approachable guy and always having a good time, always having a laugh. I mean, one of the fondest memories I have of GT was I was sitting downstairs in a meeting in Adelaide, believe it or not. I get this phone call and it's GT. Now, I didn't really know him that well, just from Wild Thing and the Secret Men's Business days. Calls me up and it was, you could hear it was a kind of a foggy, fuzzy call. So he was a long way from somewhere. He was on a sat phone. Anyway, he goes, "Hey, BP. I said, "Yeah, GT, how you going, mate?" He goes, "Mate, were you on that Coke boat in the Hobart?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "Oh, I'm out of fuel. I need to, I can see him in the distance." I said, "Where are you, mate?" He says, "In the middle of Cook Strait." It's the Coke boat. He's taking Wild Thing, I think, to Europe, and they're out of fuel. And the Coke boat just happens to be going past. He rings me up, and he goes, "Can you get hold of the skipper and get him to give some fuel?" So there's me, like, 7 in the morning in a meeting, ringing up the skipper of the boat and the Coke boat, the Coca-Cola boat, which is an old BT Challenge 67 with like 20 million litres of fuel on board, goes over to Wild Thing and gives them some fuel to get them on their way. Bit of fuel bunkering. So, you know, he's that type of guy that, you know, you'll go out of your way to help, but you'll go out of your way to help you as well. So he's a bloody true legend and stoked that he's won the Worlds. I mean, it's just so cool.
Yeah, very cool. Now, speaking of Etchells boys and our little tie-in with Radix, I thought this was interesting, you know, because one of the great joys of being sailing Etchells is you've got to lose all that weight, right?
If you're the boy band.
Yeah, if you're the boy band, that's right.
Otherwise, you're at the, kind of the normal human.
Yeah, you can be a normal human, but you do need someone like Sandy Higgins. You need a Sandy Higgins to get you over the line, Jay, if you're a normal human, you see.
Yeah, I recently was lined up to do the Midwinters last year and just three of us on board, and there was quite an aggressive weight loss program that we had to employ. The reason I mention it is with Radix now, they've just brought out their revolutionary new keto breakfast, which looks fantastic. So if you don't know about keto, it's a type of diet you have. It offers some benefits, but basically one of the things it does really well is it removes a lot of the carbs, and that's a very good way to lose weight. So if you go the keto pathway, you can lose weight, but most people go onto a keto diet for medical reasons, but you can use it if you do want to lose weight. And they've got this fantastic new flavors, but it's a blend of 29% protein, 60% fat, and just 6% net carbs, plus the extra boost of 5% of fiber. So comes in some pretty cool flavors, the old chocolate, banana. It looks like your standard milkshake flavors, you know, at the dairy, at the milk bar.
I love a milkshake.
Yep, we all do. Strawberry, coconut. It's all there. There's a whole bunch of them. What else? Vanilla.
Banana, apple cinnamon.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway.
So what you're telling me, Jordan Spencer, is I should have brought some of that kit with me over here.
Yep.
As opposed to the packet of potato chips I just had for breakfast out of the minibar.
There's not much nutritional value going on in the packet of potato chips there, boys.
Yeah, no, and when you probably want to go the Radix, mate. It's exactly what I do. But anyway, if you are interested in grabbing some, because it looks pretty cool, and if you are on the weight loss program, then jump on board with their fantastic new breakfast. Go to Radix Nutrition on the website, use Barker Radi as your discount code and away you go. So Radix Nutrition, enhancing human potential through applied nutrition. Okay.
Love it.
Now,
well done.
Oh, I mean, it's almost like I've done this before. It's it is.
You are a natural.
I've got from memory.
You are a natural. You gel the whole thing together, Jay.
Thanks, mate. I'm catalyst. I'm the hardener.
MFKP.
You're the glue that binds us together, Jordan.
You're the silicon that sticks.
Yeah. All right, let's move it on.
You're the 3M5200 of the podcast world.
In the events coming up, boys. Warrell 1000, lads. 50th year, the anniversary for the Warrell 1000. I don't know about you, boys, but we've been big fans of this show. I think we've done multiple episodes. Episode 42 with Brett White. Episode 186 with Rod Waterhouse.
From memory.
Correct. It begins 12th of May, Hollywood Beach in Florida. Hollywood, Florida, not Hollywood, California. So don't go to the West Coast. You're going to the East Coast. Excited, boys. It's a good one. F-18s racing in the open ocean. Should be pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's such a cool thing.
Yeah.
The stories from Rod and from Chris Way and those guys was pretty superb. It's kind of, you don't realize how difficult it would be until you're actually probably trying to do that sort of thing, navigate on a catamaran, two up doing bloody 20 knots.
Mentally and physically, not to mention the shore break stuff to do. Oh,
I love that.
Mm. Oh, mate.
Mm.
Yeah. So good luck, Warrellers.
Warrellers. Anyway, we'll keep you up to date, but just be aware that that is on and we're fired up ahead of that one. Another event that is on right now, it's just starting as we go to publish this, is here in Parma in France. So that's the last of the Olympic class regattas before the Olympics. It's the last caboose, the final chance. All the different Olympic classes, there's nothing to talk about yet because nothing's really happened, but you're heading to here tonight, today.
Negatore, you need to work on your geography, Jordan Spencer.
Oh.
Hayer is in Hayer in France.
Yep.
Parma.
Oh, you're going to Parma, sorry.
is in Espanol. España.
España. Sorry, Olar, for some reason. Como.
Si.
We had this chat last night again about having a talking in Spanish in an Australian accent, and it came up. So.
Parma. Sorry. Anyway, well, let's finish off here. Yeah. So it's all the Olympic classes, all the dinghies and a bunch of others, 90 nations completing. It should be great. Lots of coverage. Just find it. Go to the website. Have a look. And another one that I want to mention, then you guys can jump in. Obviously, we've got Parma Vela this week, I think, and then the Super Yacht Cup in Parma, which is
always a big thing.
June?
Coming up in June. Correct, yeah. Mundo.
Okay.
Yes.
Jump in there, boys, because now that I've got my Spanish.
Speaking of, basically Parma Vela, it's the first, let's call it the first Euro regatta where everyone is, showing their wares of the year.
Mm.
So specifically, e.g. here in La Ciota, on one of the 100-footers, the Wally Shentos, and who's got ballast this year? Who's got new sails this year? Who's done some modifications here? Who's done modifications there? So it's a bit of I wouldn't say a learning regatta, but it's going to see some
unraveling.
New
stuff. It's an unraveling.
It is an unraveling, but it's also this year it's the first of the 52 Super Series regattas, of which will be interesting to watch, especially with a couple of new boats on the racetrack to see if there hadn't been a new boat built for a number of years yet. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see if there's any changes made. So I'll be keeping a close eye on things and
you will be
reporting live from Parma, Mallorca.
Your finger's on the pulse. I can tell you. You are the pulse.
Cool. So a couple of good events coming up. Beauty. So they're on the income. On letters this week, boys, we've We've got a couple of good ones. One putting the boot into us, which is cool. I love how BP just laughs at that. That's the Rob Suddy email, I think, from memory. Now, I've just got to go and find it. Rob basically said in our coverage of the Newcastle event, we didn't mention beyond Division 1 because Bossy was just totally focused on himself. Is exactly
100%.
It's kind of 100%. I did respond to him via email. I don't know if you saw the response. Did you see the response?
Yeah.
I kind of said, look, you know, we're just three idiots having a chat. We don't know where it's going to go. We don't script. We don't do anything. We just sort of have a chat. So we take your point. Well done for getting to the start line.
No, absolutely. No, yeah. Rob, my mistake. I've made two mistakes now. So today, that was one of them.
One of the good things, though, Sid, you missed out in Div 2 and 3. And I know you guys are supportive of the average sale out there having a go and playing in the 4-metre seas with the multi-millionaire boats as well. Not trying to get our name up in lights, as we got absolutely smashed in our little 32-footer and placed nowhere. So he wasn't chasing brand recognition for himself. He just wanted to make sure that all the fleets were covered. So, yep, well listened to there. The other one, I really like this email, boys. It was an email from Archie Massey. Now, Archie had been on the show previously, episode 86, okay, from memory. And Archie writes, you once interviewed me for episode 86, about all things about all things International 14s and what it took to win in them. At the time, I'd not won the Worlds for 5 years. On the back of your interview, the reverse curse kicked in and we've won back-to-back Worlds in Perth 2019 and then Flensburg in 2022, obviously. Double reverse curse, because COVID took that gap in the middle, obviously, as we all remember. In July, we're going for our last tilt at the International 14 Worlds in Garda. I'm worried the reverse curse doesn't last more than 5 years. So leaving nothing to chance.
You've got to do a refresher course, Archie.
Please, can you give Harvey and I a shout out on your next show to refresh the reverse curse for our last hurrah? We're selling the boat after Garda and aiming to do the Worrell and other long distance challenges, winging and get back to kids sailing. We'll be on the back of our comeback tour as the 14s are forever after all. Well, that's a great email, hey?
Good email, Arch.
Yeah, recognising
You know, can we have this sort of willy-nilly action going on where people ring up and ask for a reverse curse?
I don't think we can, no. I don't.
Definitely. I mean, you just got to send money. Yeah. That's easy done.
Well, here we go. Like, this is not something we've discussed.
Well, we'll give it a go.
But we have thought about doing the reverse curse T-shirt, and we wondered if that would dilute the curse, the reverse curse. You know, like if people are thinking they'll buy the reverse curse T-shirt, and of course we'll market it that way. If we're going to sell a T-shirt, we need to not sit in our money out of our bank account. We'll say that it's a guaranteed reverse curse,
guaranteed regatta win right here.
Yeah,
100%.
I'd be scared that we'd do dilute the power of the curse
with this T-shirt.
Can you imagine? My real concern.
Well, I think we've got to be really careful here, though, because we are putting ourselves on the line of sort of some form of lawish sort of setback. Holy. You know, because they're going to think they've won the regatta. They might not even go.
The other thing I'm concerned,
I won the Worlds in 2019. Wasn't even there.
Yeah. The reverse curse is it done? Is it us giving our luck out to the world? And
I think it is.
We're cursing ourselves.
We definitely are. I mean, it's just.
Yeah, what have you done lately? Yeah. I've won fuck all.
Nothing.
Exactly.
Who is blessed with the reverse curse, you're welcome.
Yeah,
yes.
Welcome. I love it.
It's Hot Time with Bice.
All right, boys. Spoke about it at the head of the show, top of the show. The cup boats.
Yeah.
Blown away. The Kiwis have done the classic, of course. Launch the boat, go sailing straight away.
Yeah.
No stuffing around at all. We've seen Red Bull sailing now, seen Loon Race, all got Sunspars rigs, by the way. Not a coincidence. well done for those three for getting out of the sheds first. Anyway, I truly am flabbergasted. I find myself just looking at these boats on a daily basis.
Yep.
They're just out of this world, aren't they?
What they've done, and to me, the Italians, oh.
Oh, yeah.
Just the smooth, like, classic Italian styling.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Looks great.
Mm-hmm.
Ineos, we've just recently seen that. Another one to do a bit of a, let's call it, they actually did a bit of a dawn session when it rolled out the shed, but we now see in daylight. The only one that's, I would say, arguably a little bit different with the whatever that piece is, the skeg or whatever it is between the hull and the what will be the water, it's quite wider compared to the other two boats. But I'd say if you're interested in this stuff, go. I mentioned it the other week. Go check out Tom Morris, Mozzie Sails. He's got a pretty good analysis as these boats come in and out of the show. What is going on? And he speaks way more technical than we could ever imagine to think. So he does a fantastic job at that.
Yeah,
so
he's definitely focused he's in smart, on this.
Bicy.
Yeah.
He's smart, Bicy, you know, not like us.
No. Yeah. I think he's specialised. He's got very specialised. Yeah, we're more generalists. He's
broad.
A specialist.
We're broad brushes.
Generalists, come on. Don't be silly.
Well, I was, as you know, I was with one Britton Ward last week, and obviously we wanted to talk to him about his latest creation, of course, being America Magic, and he said he had to decline to come on the show at this stage, but he's happy to speak to us in a couple of weeks' time when that thing comes out of the shed. But I can tell you, he is damn excited. He says you know that he's that, and whether they like it or not, they all know what they're doing. You know, they all know what sort of intricacies each boat's got. And he said, mine's a bit this and a bit that and a bit this. And I think we're going to see something special from America Magic, to be honest.
I wonder who designed theirs via ChatGPT. I think it comes out like Homer Simpson's car.
I've learnt a bit about AI over the last few weeks, boys. I'll have to bring you up to speed on a few things. It'll open your mind up because it's not as smart as people think. But anyway, I'll explain how it works.
But that's coming from you, Jay.
Superhuman
that you are.
The supercomputer Jordan Spencer.
This is shit, this AI crap.
Anyway, we look forward to keeping a close eye on the cup as it evolves. And actually, this is the business end. Well, we've had fun, we've played around with the little blokes, blah, blah, blah. Now, this is the business end.
The real deal.
Yep.
They look good, though, don't they? I mean, you know how much I love the 40s? And now, seeing these new boats popping out, I'm just getting pretty... it's a little bit of a little
chubby, little chubs. Yeah,
little
chubby.
Bit of robot chubby action going on. It's cool. I'm excited.
The Jordan Chubb.
Jay Chubb.
All right. Next, boys. Wankers.
Move on.
Falling Wards.
Oh,
yes.
Friend of the show.
We could put this under a reverse curse, couldn't we?
That's friend cool. of the show, Luke.
Friend Dolly. Of the show.
Yeah. Was Falling Wards took place in Genoa, in Porto Antico, during the week.
Yes.
And, just a quick run over everything that happened. The overall award goes to friends of the show, the Wasp Class.
Yeah.
So,
which I'll talk about a bit later on as well, because there's a bit of bit going on there, yeah.
Female sailor, reverse curve, friend of the show, Hattie Rogers.
Hey, beauty.
Male sailor, Streedy, good on you, Sam. Sailing team, 11th hour racing team, friends of the show.
Just all Barker audience.
Innovation technology, the AC40 flight control system.
Yeah,
I believe when you tested the boat yourself, Jordan, you said, "I reckon this should win a flying award."
with the engineers, I spent some time with the engineers. Yeah, that's it.
The sustainability went to Crazy Lobster. I have to say, I've got no idea what the hell the Crazy Lobster is.
Well, I can tell you, it's not normal.
I haven't researched that one.
No.
The falling event, best falling event, the Sail GP in Saint Tropez.
Well,
Falling Pathway, The Wasp. The Motorboat was the Future E-Foiling, so I'm assuming that's full electric.
Don't.
Commercial Project.
Yep.
Artemis. The one-off boat, the Bolton, the Baltic, the Raven 111.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
The Skimmer. Yeah.
She's a bloody weapon, yeah.
She's a weapon. The production boat, the Switch.
Yeah,
and the water toy, the Hydro Flyer.
Yeah, we had no Hydro Flyer.
I believe such a thing. What's going on?
But you missed the
never ends.
The project, which was so you had the commercial project, but there was a project there, the Sea Air Flying Chase Boat.
Sea Air Flying Chase Boat.
Persico. Mm. Mark Somerville, Persico.
Yes. Yeah.
So there's a lot of reverse cursing just going
on. A lot of Bardocradians there, isn't there? There isn't there. God. We go, okay, don't we?
We need to stick a foil on our logo, boys.
We could win.
Well,
we could,
maybe that's
we could win the best foiling logo.
Done with that boat, and it wouldn't have nosedived like that.
Well, that's right. Maybe we could win the best foiling logo.
It was an early foiling trial. It was just coming off the foils, is what it was. congratulations, though. Like it's this is great, just great. So lots of innovation and ideas, and they're doing it in a lot of different pathways. So it's good to see. So very happy to see the result to that one. So, yeah, congratulations, all the Falling Week Award winners, hey?
Mm.
Yep. The other stuff we've got happening, boys, the Club Swans 50s are racing this week, or the Swans, the One Designs are racing this week. So that's coming to an end of play today at time of recording. So no big results yet, but we'll pass those on and then...
I'm sort of across them if you want, but yeah, that's
well, give us something. Yeah,
G Spot is in first in the 36s. Ferranen in the 50s, the Club Swan 50. So that's Ross Warburton's boat, and then Giacomo's Serena di La Piggio is the owner of G Spot. But yeah, so it's the start of the season, and the Swan racing. Big fans. And a lot of our friends getting plenty of money and income from those racing, so that's good.
100%. And then the other one going on, boys, is the world's longest regatta. Well, what seems like. You come out of Newcastle, then everyone heads north, in the northeasterly direction to Port Stephens, of which they have the passage week this week. And then next weekend is they have the Port Stephens Sailing Week, I think it's called.
Yep.
So plenty of activity happening on the East Coast. But we'll report in with some winners and grinners out the back of that further down the track.
We'll probably do Division 2 and Division 3.
You reckon?
Absolutely. 100%.
We're all divisions. So,
stand by, Rob. We'll give a full breakdown.
You know who's – I will tell you one result at the moment because he'll love it because he'd be grumpy if we don't. In Div 2 at the moment, leading the way is a boat called Young at the Heart. Young at Heart, skipper, won Simon Grosser.
Yes. Good on you, Simon Young Grosser. 88. Well done.
Mm.
Nice, Simon. Well done.
Yeah, no.
See you in a few weeks in pit water.
Gary Holt's leading Div 1 in. Let's get it on. Okay.
And then, of course, the 40s. Boys, what's happening there?
Oh,
past 40s?
Been watching it.
Who's back? You've been keeping a close eye on things?
Speaking of making mistakes, remember I think I said last week that...
Separation.
Yeah, I talked about the separation. I hadn't done any weather research or anything, but just randomly I'd probably just naturally head south. And our friends on, and I hope I didn't influence this... Our friends on De Kuppel did go south with Everiali. They've had a shocker. So
no good.
if I could,
Good old Kiwi,
If De Kuppel are nearly 1,200 miles off the lead. And Everal, 1,000 miles off the lead. But our leaders overall are just about to touch home. They've got about 360 miles to go. So they're a day or two out and heading.
That's a big spread, isn't it? That's a big tactical error.
Yeah, she's a big one. Anyway, it was the weather system that popped up on the north side, obviously. It shows you how.
Clearly, I've just had my first look at it.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
It shows you how important weather forecasting and modelling is these days. And in all honesty, when I saw the boys going south, I thought, you know what, that looked pretty good when they did it, and I couldn't see why you would go to the north. And but then this system, I didn't look at the weather at all. I just saw what was on the map, and then, wow, they got plenty. And they were doing 400. And
the Jordan Spencer School of Weather comes true again.
Well, they're doing 430 mile at one stage on one of the days, which is pretty phenomenal for a 40-foot boat, boys, with no foils. Like, that is – you'd be pretty happy.
That is cooking.
It's definitely cooking. So, yeah, congratulations to those boys. But anyway, yeah, that's what's going on there. So that should be just finishing probably this time tomorrow, although we're nice. – We haven't published this. So for those listening, probably, yeah, morning.
Just now.
Morning and Monday, something like that.
Cool. That's me, boys.
All righty.
Well, I've got to get to an airport and
Before we leave, I've got to say I went to a little function last night promised to go to. The Portland and Weymouth, we call Weymouth, they call it Weymouth, but it's not Weymouth, it's Weymouth. Yeah, Weymouth National Sailing Academy here in the UK for the Magenta Group, for the Magenta, launch the Magenta Foiling Team, which is organised by our Barcaradian Alessinia. What a cool night. Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I just did, like, as I said off air, I didn't string it together as to who would be there, but it turns out I know a lot of people.
Yeah. How'd you go? Did you win?
I had a win, it was great. But I tell you what they've got going on, it's super cool. A, how much we push the Magenta Group program along. You know, since day one, we've really supported it and, you know, got behind it, and we love the whole thing. So there's that big tick. The next one is based around, would you believe it, the wasps and the pathway, and trying to keep It's not a male female thing. It's trying to keep these younger kids, you know, like they're even talking 10, 11 year old kids that are coming through, because it's that type of boat, and trying to keep them after that 18 to 30 bracket, which is, you know, where our big problem is. You know, what do you do if you're not an Olympic sailor? What do you do if you want to become, you know, more serious in your sailing, you know, whether that's pro or you're able to fund, you know, a project, and how to keep them in, you know, the sport. So there's a lot going on. Obviously, last night being the launch of the Magenta Foiling Team, the 669F, with Alessinia and her team. It was great. She managed to get $20 out of me, so she's done well.
Oh, there you go.
But if you do want to, you know, support them, there is a lottery she's raising money for to get the team up and running. The people there are all, you know, super excited about the project, and really trying to promote, I guess, if you like, more people like Alice to use this platform to try. And if you're interested, you are a female and you want to give it a crack, then just reach out.
Yeah,
Vicky Lowe obviously was there running it, whom I didn't know was going to be there, and I met her in 2008, and then all of a sudden it all just clicked. Josie Glyden was there. They're all there.
Yeah, everyone. All our friends. Good on them. Good to see. I love the power of the female sailor that's emerging. It's just awesome. So good on them.
Yeah, and it is. And one of the big things that came out of it was, you know, like, and for instance, you know, if there was a position come up, let's say, for example, there's a role or a job or something come up and you can't do it, don't be afraid to tip in a friend and, you know, try and build the platform, and, you know, don't be afraid to hold on to these positions, you know, share it around and get more people in. So, you know, they were pretty excited about the female side of things. So good on them.
Cool.
Bravo. Well done, BP, for flying the flag.
Thanks,
well
me.
Done. I tell you,
it wasn't easy. The train on the way down decided to get the tracks fixed, so I had to get off the train and get on a double-decker bus in Bournemouth. Get off at Dorchester, back onto the train. I had no idea where I was. It took nearly all day to do the train trip.
Good stuff.
But right, I made boys. It.
Let's wrap her up.
Righto, finish her on.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening.
ton of fun having you hang out. Remember, send us some notes at cheers@barkarati.com and we will come back to you. But we love everything that comes through. We love that you listen to us and we thank you very much. Remember,
we got a surprise coming up, listeners.
What, you found your bags?
No. If you're getting a little bit chilly, we might have some merch popping out.
Yeah, they're looking good too. And Radix Nutrition, jump on their website if you want to get some of that fantastic food. And remember to enhance your potential through applied nutrition. Go to Radix Nutrition, use Barkarati as your discount code and get a discount on us. Have a great week, everyone. Love your work.
Cool.
Right to the end.
Right.
Oh, look, we never got this far. I've timed it right to the end.
I'm going flying pants on, flying shirt, flying jacket.